order. It is April the 25th, 2005. Welcome everybody here today. Beautiful sunny day in Oregon. I believe the spring has sprung.
For the second time, Madam Chair.
The grass is red.
Second time since January.
That's right. Well, we always get that little fall summer in February, and it gets us all excited, and then the rain comes back, and everybody is disappointed. But I believe we're on with spring. We're going to start off today just right along the agenda that you have, and I will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 680. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 680 directs the Oregon Department of Aviation to establish a pilot program to foster economic development adjacent to rural airports by encouraging through-the-fence operations. I have described in my staff measure summary the Dash 3 amendments. Now we have before us that came out of Legislative Council this afternoon the Dash 5 amendments, which are essentially the same. So I'll go through what the amendment does and then point out the one difference between the Dash 3s and the new Dash 5s.
Okay,
so the amendments will replace the original bill. You'll find a definition in the amendment for aviation-related activity, for the pilot site, for rural airport, and the definition also through the fence operations. The amendment would direct the Oregon Department of Aviation to establish a pilot program at up to three rural airports to encourage development of through the fence operations designed to promote economic development. One of those would be located at the Aurora State Airport, and then not more than two additional rural airports that would volunteer for the program. It directs the pilot sites to use public-private partnerships to the extent practicable. It requires the Department of Aviation to provide standards and guidelines for through-the-fence operations by rules within 6 months of the effective date. It requires the Department of Land Conservation and Development and city and county jurisdictions to cooperate with the Department of Aviation to ensure that land use planning goals are met and that the land use planning barriers are eliminated within 2 years of the effective date. Those previous two items I just stated would be repealed on January 2nd, 2009. The amendment directs the Economic and Community Development Department to assist the pilot sites and requires pilot sites to utilize innovative airport infrastructure and operations funding to support the rural airports, again, to the extent practicable. It's my understanding the only difference between what I just described in the Dash 3s and the now before us Dash 5 amendments is on page 3 of the actual amendment. On line 10, in both instances, so we're replacing essentially 3 sub A, it's my understanding, which now would read essentially that the Department of Aviation by rule. One of the things that the rule would ensure is that the operations provide financial support to the airport in compliance with Federal Aviation Administration regulations.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could staff explain to us what that means? Or is that just a question we need to ask when they come
you
up?
You might want to ask Senator Johnson. She's going to be up in just a minute, and I think
I think she would be more qualified to answer that than I
with that. Okay. And then the Dash 3s also had the changes in the land conservation and development?
Correct.
I did not. Okay.
Yes.
Correct. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Let's invite Senator Johnson up, our expert on airport matters.
I will note that this does have respect for referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I am the state senator from Senate District 16, and I introduced this bill, Senate Bill 680, on behalf of the Oregon Aviation Business Association. I appreciate you hearing the bill. What we're dealing with here, and it might be useful for the committee, is to know some of the esoteric of my industry. For 20 years, I owned and operated a helicopter company and was involved with what's called the FBO, the Fixed Base Operator at the Scappoose Airport. The term "through the fence" refers to private property on which there is capital investment, where airplanes come literally through the fence to use the publicly owned, generally publicly owned, asset of the runway. Most airports are in public ownership. They are either owned by cities, the state, port districts in some cases, and so the references in the bill to "through the fence" are specifically the nomenclature of airport management that talk about, instead of having a leasehold on the airport, that a business would sit on dirt owned by the business and they would literally come through the fence. Through the fence agreements exist all over the place. I'm very familiar with one of them at the Scappoose Airport, and they are opportunities that come about for a variety of different reasons for businesses to actually physically own their dirt. This bill was a long time coming, and during the time that it's been floating around in the legislature, it has picked up some confusion, I think some mythology, and certainly some concerns. And I want to say right from the outset that we continue to be willing to work with any folks bringing forward concerns. As you see from the number of amendments, we've worked very hard to go through the issues. We still have some. But the reason for this bill is best summed up in a quote from my local newspaper that is right now dealing with an application for a through the fence. And I think there's a picture in front of you, but if not, this is it. This is a $15 million, give or take, capital improvement that will, the day the doors open, create 75 jobs. This is the fifth fastest growing company in the state of Oregon, Oregon Aero, that makes a variety of aviation-related products, including a lot of work for the United States military. And they have, right now, the designs, the architectural work is done. They are ready to commence work on this building as soon as they can secure a through-the-fence agreement from the Port of St. Helens. This bill does not affect this outcome at all. The Port of St. Helens affirmed last Christmas that they welcome through-the-fence operators, and so I just wanted to give you an example of what it is we're talking about with this bill. This level of private sector investment in a small rural airport is a huge deal for the economy of Scappoose, but this whole through-the-fence discussion occurs completely absent any legislative action on this bill. But I want to read you out of the local paper commenting on this through-the-fence application why it is that some of us feel very strenuously that there ought to be an opportunity to encourage through the fence. And I quote to you now. This is Wade Bryant speaking. He's the FAA manager for the Seattle Airports District Office. It has been our experience that very rarely does any through-the-fence operator pay as much towards the support of the airport as the people who own the airport, said Wade Bryant, the FAA manager for the Seattle Airports District Office. So the ideal situation would be for the Port of St. Helens to own every business on that airport and run every business on that airport, Bryant said. We know that's not practical, so we allow other individuals to lease space at the airport. It is that kind of attitude, excuse me, that is, I think, sadly pervasive in a number of our smaller communities where the FAA guidance, and it's just that, guidance, not law, has had a chilling effect for the obvious reason of this kind of a quote on private investments at airports, particularly rural airports. Today you're going to hear a lot about this bill. I'd like to start by telling you what the bill does and does not do. What it does do is create a permissive mechanism for airports to work with the Department of Aviation to proactively accommodate capital investment at airports. Again, this kind of capital investment. And for little rural airports, I think any one of our colleagues who's familiar with little rural airports would die for this kind of opportunity at their facility.
Madam Chair, just so I can understand, Senator Johnson, as you talk about the bill now, we're talking about the Dash 5?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The Dash 5s put Oregon in the vanguard of encouraging and accommodating private enterprise at airports. The bill recognizes that market realities, that given market realities, sometimes banks won't loan on leased land, and many companies do not want to make substantial capital investments in buildings only to have them revert to the owner of the airport in a fixed period of time. It also corrects a land use discrepancy at the Aurora Airport, where two operations can't share a common septic system. What the bill does not do is force or mandate any activity on the part of any local airport, nor does it diminish local control of airports. It does not compromise local security or interfere with homeland security. All security issues such as fencing and electronic gates can be incorporated into the site designs to assure security. It does not overly burden the Department of Aviation, as they already have done a lot of work on through the fence activities, given that almost all of the property on their major holding, and that's the Aurora Airport, is through the fence. And they have a permanent airport manager in place at that airport, the one airport named directly in the bill. It does not include a proscription that any airport that I have a personal interest in is included in the bill, and that's been a subject of some discussion. Nor does it mandate or even encourage through-the-fence operations at airports with commercial service. We are speaking strictly about general aviation airports. Through-the-fence at commercial service airports is not always a good idea. During the course of this hearing, others will say that there is developable land at other Oregon rural airports. However, given that much of it sits bare and unused at this point of time, one might ask, what's the harm in adding one more tool to the toolbox in local solicitations and their opportunities to attract business? For all the reasons I've already touched on, business may want to own their own dirt. Where the developable land might not be where the business wants to go, we are currently seeing a clustering of activities, aviation activities at certain airports where businesses might desire to own their own land. I readily admit that we still have some work to do on this bill. Given that I was integrally involved in the creation of the Oregon Department of Aviation, I want their board to feel comfortable with this legislation, ergo the amendments that we've tried to move towards some of their concerns. They aren't there yet. Their chair, Mike Burrell, who I greatly respect, has been away and not able to be involved in person-to-person negotiations. Their director is brand new, and some of their board are new and maybe taking their time to feel their way with respect to this issue. Oregon airport managers may testify as to their concerns. We have worked in the amendments to accommodate those. This bill raises the threshold question of how aggressively do we want to develop, including air service, our opportunities at rural airports. Airports, as you know, certainly, Madam Chair, from the work that you're doing on your airport, are and can be key drivers in the economy of the places where they are located. I have a constituent in my district, a fellow named Michael Curry, who is a major puppeteer animator. He's done work for the opening of the Olympics in Denver, for the Millennium celebrations in Times Square. He did the production on Broadway of The Lion King. And I asked him one time, how is it that you can have a global company located in Scappoose? This is a company with highly skilled employees, highly paid employees. And his answer was, I need three things to be successful. I need the UPS, I need the internet, and I need an airport. Senate Bill 680 is the vehicle to make Michael Curry's example of a reality for other airports. I ask you to support this bill, and I ask you to recognize our desire to continue to accommodate the reasonable concerns of folks who have issues with the Dash 5s. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Questions for Senator Johnson? All right. Senator Whitsett recognized.
Chair Boucher, Senator Johnson, first of all, let me preface this by saying I know absolutely nothing about airports.
Good. This gives us a chance to educate you.
However, I have here a letter from the Jackson County Airport Authority, and they expressed some concern. You indicated that the FAA probably opposes this, and that in this letter it points out that the FAA supports about 95% of the capital improvements at airports within the state. And the quote here is, as a general principle, the FAA will recommend that airport owners refrain from entering into any agreement that grants access to the public landing area of aircraft normally stored and serviced on adjacent property. How do you propose to get by that without losing FAA funding?
Well, they won't take the funding away. Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, they will not withdraw the funding. It has been the FAA's position that through the fence is undesirable. It has mostly to do with economics and control. Control, in my opinion, being the larger of the two factors. If the airport sponsor controls all of the property, they have an absolute vice grip on anything that happens there. The FAA gives guidance in the form of advisory circulars to airport sponsors, and that guidance is it is not desirable to have through the fence operations. However, they will not withdraw funding from airports that have through the fences, and I would cite for you Scappoose, which had its runway lengthened during a time that there was a through the fence operation there.
Your contention is in the center that the airport managers are worrying about something that isn't going to happen.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I think it's completely appropriate that the airport managers raise this. And just by way of establishing my credentials, I was the Aeronautics Administrator for the state of Oregon for 5 years, and in that capacity received federal funding for a number of state airports and worked very closely with the airport's district office in Seattle. It is, again, the FAA's position that control of the airport by the airport sponsor is absolutely, in their view, essential to the good and proper functioning of an airport. There are many instances that put the lie to that, including Aurora, a state-owned facility, where the largest investment has been made by through-the-fence operators at that airport, and I think you will hear from some of those businesses as today's testimony goes on. And Aurora has also been the recipient of federal funding. So while I agree with the airport managers that it is FAA guidance that through the fence is not the FAA's preferred methodology for airport management, I would dispute the insinuation that FAA money will be withdrawn from any airport that allows through the fence, because I can cite you examples where FAA money has been forthcoming to airports with through the fence.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
All right. We've got Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little bit confused about what this bill does. And like Doug, like Senator Whitsitt, I'm probably not as educated in all this stuff as maybe I ought to be. But the most, I guess the airport I'm most familiar with is Hillsborough. Would this bill apply to Hillsborough?
The way the bill is written right now is that in order to be included in the bill, you would have to ask to be included in the bill. And from discussions I've had with the Port of Portland and their very capable management of their airports, they would probably decline to participate, although there are port representatives sitting behind me, and you could pose that question to them. At this point, with the exception of Aurora that's named in the bill, all of the other participation would be permissive.
Madam Chair, can I continue? In looking at the way Hillsborough is today, though, I mean, they already have all of these businesses that surround the airport that operate in and out of the airport. How is that different than what this bill proposes?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, because the land at Hillsborough is owned by the Port of Portland, and those businesses have entered into lease agreements with the Port of Portland, who owns the underlying dirt.
Okay.
This bill would make it possible for those airports that applied and Aurora to accommodate through the fence where the dirt is owned by someone other than the airport sponsor. Mm-hmm. Could be owned by a private individual, attract private capital, private investment, and then by contract make arrangements for how they were going to use the airport and what fees they would pay towards the support of the airport. One of the FAA reasons for not liking through the fence is the argument that through the fence operators don't pay their fair share of the airport upkeep. In my experience, the through the fence operators that I'm very familiar with pay a disproportionately high share of the upkeep of the airport. And so that's the difference. It's who owns the underlying dirt. And by what terms and conditions can you come literally through the fence to use the generally publicly owned asset? And what this bill contemplates is working out some kind of a relationship with the department whereby those private businesses occupying their own dirt, building with their own money, would work out some kind of a remunerative agreement with the airport so that they wouldn't receive some disproportionate advantage by being off airport, and that they would contribute through the contract, the ingress-egress agreement that was negotiated, they would contribute their proportionate share to the upkeep and maintenance of the airport. And just as a postscript, as you know from your time in transportation issues, FAA money comes into this state at a rate of $9 federal for every $1. So responsible operators at airports have a genuine desire to have a pool of money available at that airport to match any federal grants that are made available. And much of that money is received from fees and licenses and ingress, egress, those sorts of things. So for the through-the-fence operator, there would be some kind of a contractual agreement negotiated and arranged that would have them paying their fair share of the upkeep of the airport.
Okay, I think that answers my questions. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Senator Przanski and then Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Senator Johnson, you may have just started answering the question I had. There's basically, when Council gave us the change from the dash 5 to the dash 3, lines 10 to 12, where it says, ensure that the operations provide financial support to the airport in compliance with Federal Aviation Administration regulations. What does that mean?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, what you want is the kind of arrangement that has a through-the-fence operator contributing to the upkeep of the airport at a minimum equal to those that are the lessees on the airport. And they would establish ingress-egress relationships that would have them contribute their fair share to the upkeep of the airport, recognizing that they are on private land and others are on leased land that belongs to the airport sponsor. So you'd want them contributing, the through-the-fence folks, you'd want them contributing to the overall economic vitality of the airport.
Okay. Senator Metzger?
Thank you. Senator Johnson, if you could just help me a little bit, try to, so I can really understand what is the through-the-fence versus the part of the airport. I'm somewhat familiar, not with all the operations of Aurora, but been out there many times. So Columbia Helicopters, what are they?
Through-the-fence. Madam Chair, Senator Metzger.
I thought they owned their stuff. So they would be a through-the-fence operation.
That's correct.
Because they service, well, now they're expanding. They're servicing they're serving the National Guard, they're serving the U.S. Army, so, and that seems to work out there.
Actually, Senator Metzger, Madam Chair, I want to be absolutely accurate. My memory may be a little faulty. They may have some lease holding as well.
Right, so they might be a combination, but they do have some of their own that are through the fence.
That is correct,
very,
Senator Metzger.
Very restrictive to that area of the airport.
And I believe that you will hear later today in the testimony from Joel Scoggins, a representative of Columbia, who can speak with much more authority to the exact nature of their contractual relationship with the state. Since I left Aeronautics, my memory has dimmed a little bit as to what those contracts actually look like.
Okay. That helps, because I was thinking they were, so thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I have Gary Oxley next. Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon Aviation Business Association. Let me state in my opening remarks that Senate Bill 680 is not a mandate. Senate Bill 680 is voluntary. It is an opportunity for rural airports who choose to participate, to do new things, to look for and help create new jobs, and to promote new business in rural Oregon. It is not a mandate. As I said, I represent the Oregon Aviation Business Association. Our association includes private air park owners, aviation consultants, companies such as Columbia Helicopters, Metal Innovations, fixed base operators such as Dennis Winningstad, who's the fixed base operator and general manager of the Newport Airport, the South End Air Park and Jet Center at Aurora, Sky Research, a small independently owned company in Ashland, Oregon, who in fact just recently obtained from NASA a $1 billion contract to do research for NASA. OABA came about as a result of discussions between small aviation related businesses, the Economic Development Department, and in fact the governor. And all agreed that there was a need to create economic development at rural airports, that a template that would encourage and pursue development that would create jobs that do not exist today, that would encourage new business to come to Oregon and existing business not to leave Oregon, and to recruit businesses that would be small family businesses, minority businesses, businesses that could successfully cluster and work together at rural airports. Many of the initiatives and the concepts that OABA supports were in fact included and incorporated into the 2004 Oregon Business Plan. Senator Johnson eloquently presented the purpose and the intent of Senate Bill 680, and I'm not going to waste time reiterating what she had to say, as there are several OABA members here today who would like to speak to the bill and in support of it. They've come from all over the state. They are people who are small business people, for the most part, people you need to hear from. They create payrolls, and in many instances, they created their businesses from their kitchen tables and have grown their businesses into the successes that they are today. One OABA member who's going to testify before you was recently honored as the national recipient of the Freedom of Flight Award. He started his business in Aurora, Oregon over 30 years ago, and today is the largest kit plane manufacturer in the world. It's people like these who Senate Bill 680 will help. It's rural Oregon who Senate Bill 680 will be a beneficiary of. Some in the aviation field have questioned the intent of this bill, or simply are opposed to it, and will argue that land is plentiful and that if economic development were going to occur in rural Oregon, it would have occurred around airports. I would ask that you consider and ask them if they are agents of change, that if in fact they have sought rural aviation development, and if so, what their string of successes would be. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to bring forward several OABA members, and if I may, I would like to bring them forward in the following order. Jerry Dale, who is the chairman of OABA and the owner of the Sportsman Air Park. Ted Millar, who is the owner of South End Air Park and Jet Center at Aurora. Dick Van Grovenson, who is the owner of Vans Aircraft and was the recipient of the 2004 Freedom of Flight Award. Joe Scogans with Columbia Helicopters. Gail Thompson, who is the controller of Oregon Aero. And finally, Aaron Fagery, who is the owner of Aaron Fagery and Associates, who is an aviation consultant and can and will, at your pleasure, walk you through the technicalities of the Dash 5 amendments. So with that, with your approval, Madam Chair, Mr. Jerry Dale.
All right. Thank you very much. Jerry?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jerry Dale, and I'm chairman of OABA, Oregon Aviation Business Association, and my family also own and operate Sportsman Air Park in Newburgh. We've a family operation that have been there since 1946. Obviously, I'm not the first generation, even though it's getting pretty gray. Senator Johnson was very eloquent about through the fence. I'll make a couple other comments about what through the fence really means, and it is simply private property access to a public facility. Each one of you every day does the same thing when you drive from your house onto a public street. That's merely all it is to be able to do that. Private property all over and every other mode of transportation has access to public facilities, and that's all an airport is a public facility. But typically airports are not done that way. They want control. They have build fences, and that's where I guess through the fence comes from, and only will allow people to lease land. And then at a short lease period, 20 or 30 years, as a state, I believe, has a maximum lease period they can do. They cannot do leases longer than that. And at the end of that lease period, if they choose not to renew the lease, they have that option. You either have to remove your building or they just forfeit it. There's a case going on in San Diego right now. The city of San Diego is refusing to renew a lease to a company there that has been in business for 60 years and the largest operator on the field. And they simply want the business that operation has, and they're virtually going to put them out of business. That's what can happen with these things. If you wanted to try to build a model to limit growth the way airports are done, especially general aviation airports, you couldn't build a much better one than their current. We think it's better if you can encourage private property access. The people will build buildings on the land that they own. They will pay property taxes on those. They will probably more come in taxes through the value they build than they will be able to get lease for leasehold on the airport itself or on publicly owned land. And I know myself, I would not probably build a building and let someone take it away from me at the end of a lease period. But and the reason people do that, I believe, is they want to be in business, they want to be in the aviation business, and that's been the only game in town. And we think that there could be a better way to do it. My way of thinking would be that what the government should own or the public should own is just the runway taxiway infrastructure, and let private business own and operate all the land on either side of the runway and have access to it the same way we do with highways, roads, streets. It's done the same way. So why won't it work with airports? We think it will. We are currently, even though the airport that I own is a privately owned airport, we really don't have that problem. But we are working with the city of Newburgh right now and partnering with them and to build an economic development zone around the airport so that we can attract private businesses and give them access to the airport and sell them land. They can operate off their own dirt, as Senator Johnson says so eloquently. And we think that's a better way to go. And this bill will give a pilot project to allow those kind of things to happen. And we think that's a better way to go. Does anyone have any questions, Madam Chair? So.
All right. Any questions for Jerry? Mm-hmm. Senator Przanski?
Thank you. I guess the last comment you made about taking land and selling it. So under this proposal, are we looking at requiring the public facility to sell off some of its land that may be adjacent to its operating area for private ownership?
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, no, that's not part of this bill at all. Part of the bill is not to require any public land to be sold to anyone. It's just allow access. And what I was referring to is my own instance where I own land adjacent to the airport in my own situation. That's what we will be doing to allow them to have access to the runway. There will be some fees and charges back and forth like that.
Let me follow up on that, Gary. The business would own the property, or you would own the property?
The business would own the property, Madam Chair. The business would own the property that they operate off of. We would still keep title to the airport, and we can see in the future sometime that we might go to a public ownership of that basic infrastructure.
All right. If there are no other questions, I'm going to call. Is Dennis next, or who do you have next?
Actually, Madam Chair, Ted Millar from the South End Airport,
right.
And Dick Van Gunfrey.
Ted Millar, and I believe he's from Aurora.
Right.
All right.
Madam Chairman, Senators,
welcome.
My name is Ted Millar, and I own Westwood Development Corporation and the South End Air Park at Aurora. I started Westwood in 1958, and we built our construction business around working for national retailers all over the Northwest, as far as Salt Lake, Idaho, Washington, California, and Oregon. And wouldn't have been able to do that if it hadn't been for our ability to work off of airports. In fact, that made us very competitive in working in rural communities that had no other way of getting there reasonably. I flew the governor around a couple times around the state to small communities when he first became governor, and it was almost overwhelming. Every place we went, they were trying to encourage economic development in these small communities and couldn't get it because they didn't have adequate airport service, or they didn't have decent runway facilities or an operation for companies to locate there. And it was almost apparent in every case that if they wanted to encourage businesses to relocate a portion of their business to those small communities, they had to do it through airports, and airports are a perfect cluster already. Our country was built on small businesses and their ability to grow and react, and that allows these small communities to participate in the national economy. All of the development that has occurred at the Aurora Airport has been done by private enterprise. Not one building has been built by the government. And the term through the fence is kind of interesting because we have fenced the airport private enterprise paid for our share of the fence, then it goes around the outside. And I believe the term that they use is it's all airport property regardless of ownership, and that's in the through the fence agreements. I think what we need to do is strengthen airport's role in the multimodal transportation system that's going on nationwide. You see, since 9/11 especially, that it's almost impossible to get to some of these small communities by the time you drive to the airport, wait 2 hours, get on a flight, and then drive 3 or 4 hours from that airport to the community you want to go to. And nationwide, they're starting to encourage development of all these underutilized airport facilities by encouraging smaller airplanes to be able to go directly to those communities without having to go through the hubbing system. And that's a model that's starting to grow nationwide, and I think Oregon can be a leader in that effort. And we'd like to see, through this bill, encourage the public-private partnerships that already exist around the state. It already exists at Aurora, and I think if anybody would like to come to Aurora, you'd be able to see a very vital airport that's growing dramatically, that's serving the need of the communities. And so that's why we're supporting this. Any questions?
You have a lot of property around Aurora Airport. It's big. When I was there, I was surprised at the size of it. What? How many acres are there?
I don't know how many acres there is total at the airport. And we own 22 acres, and we'll probably, if we build it out the way the master plan shows, probably have an investment of somewhere between $30 and $40 million. And I think there's some other interesting things that could occur along with this bill that would allow some of the additional property taxes that are created from all this development to maybe be channeled in some form to help run the aviation department. Like in our case, we more than pay our share of the operation of the airport because we buy the land, we pay for all of our own improvements, all of our own taxiways, all of our own infrastructure, sewer, water, storm, everything. And then we bring all of these businesses to the airport because of our private investment. All of those businesses make the airplanes go, and that's what creates the fuel taxes that are becoming very substantial in operating the Department of Aviation. But the department still needs more money, and they should be able to get it out of some of those property taxes from that additional growth.
Do we have some questions of Ted?
I just have one question.
Oh, Senator Mann.
So on your airport, on Aurora, so this would be to the south then of the airport, because you got Arndt Road. I'm just trying to think, you're kind of sandwiched.
We're down on Kyle Road.
Right, so you'd be down on that end, would yes. be the potential growth there for Aurora.
Yes, we're right adjacent to Vance Aircraft.
Right, okay. Thanks.
All right. Ted, I'm going to ask you to step back and have Gary call up the next.
Madam Chair, Dick Van Grunspan, the owner of Vance Aircraft and the recipient of the 2004 Freedom of Flight Award.
Madam Chairman, Senators, as mentioned, I'm Richard Van Grunspan, the CEO of Vans Aircraft and also President of HD Aviation. A little background, we started Vans Aircraft in 1973. We basically are a company that designs and manufactures kit aircraft for home building. As you may know, the FAA licenses such aircraft for personal, non-commercial use. Fortunately, over the years, we grew steadily, and by the late 90s, we had outgrown the facilities we had in North Plains, Oregon, and we were able to locate land which we were able to purchase at the Aurora Airport. The parcel available was in excess of our needs, so we formed HD Aviation as a property company. Built and leased two large buildings, both the Vans Aircraft and to Artex Manufacturing. It represented to this date an investment of maybe $6 million. I'm not sure how that would have happened if we had not been able to purchase this property and do it on our own. I'm not sure how the FAA or the ODA would have facilitated that as efficiently as we're able to do on our own. Currently, Vans Aircraft employs about 75 people. Artex Manufacturing, who, by the way, manufacture emergency locator transmitters, and they are the leading manufacturer of such in the world, employ about 90 people. Vans Aircraft is the leading kit manufacturer in the world. Over the years, we've shipped over 10,000 aircraft kits, over 4,000 of which have been completed and flown by private builders around the world. I think it's important to remember, both began locally as small mom-and-pop businesses. Vans Aircraft has also been the touchstone for a number of supporting vendor-supplier businesses, mostly currently located off-airport. The location on the Aurora Airport has been beneficial to our growth. It's primarily a manufacturing company. The airport runway is vital for flight sales demonstration. We would like to encourage the location and relocation of support businesses on available property adjacent to our primary business, because having support businesses nearby would be beneficial for overall efficient operation. However, it's important that such opportunity be affordable within the scope of these smaller businesses. Looking toward the future, since we are involved in the small aircraft part of aviation, it looks pretty bright because, kind of associated with the kit airplane business, the FAA has created a new category of airplanes known as light sport aircraft, which the intention of which would be more affordable entry-level aircraft for training and personal ownership. While these may not represent big dollars in the sense that we like to think of, these aircraft are the foundation for the industry. I'd like to use the parallel that most of us own Volkswagens before we own Mercedes or Lexus. Actually, I don't own either yet. But that's the other, to hit a point that was already mentioned, that I feel very strongly that private enterprise, independent business, is a backbone of the economy of the country. I think it's important to recognize the word independent. Independent businessmen tend to think that way. They very much want to own their own property and control their own destiny to the greatest degree. And this through-the-fence private property ownership is a way to achieve that. We independent, creative, innovative businessmen know how to create product and thus jobs. We just ask that the public sector recognize us as vital to the economic growth and be as proactive as possible so that we can most effectively be free to innovate, produce product, and thus stimulate the economy. Thank you.
Very good testimony. I enjoyed reading your handout very much. I was really privileged to know a wonderful person. My husband's brother was an airline pilot with United, collector of antique planes, and a builder of his home-built aircraft. And having known him, one thing that I learned about him was he was the happiest ever in his life when he was at an airport. So I guess that is true of most of you guys that like to deal around with planes.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think that sometime the term airplane crazy has been used, but I think the world would be a dull place if it weren't for crazy people.
That's right. That's right. Well, he had to be one of the most superhuman beings I've ever known. Great guy. Okay. Any questions of this?
Well, just one observation, Madam Chair. You said you had 10,000 kits you've sent out and 4,000 have been built and flown, which means 6,000 of them are probably like my cars in the garage. Where, you know, one day I'll get to them. It sounds like there's a lot of kits that people still have to put together.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, this is true. Building an airplane is a big project. And since it's done on a spare time basis by individuals, it can take it quite a while. So to say that only that number of them have been completed is not necessarily a criticism of it. It's just the way it works. The gestation period is rather long. But you're absolutely right that particularly the people that build their own airplanes are very dedicated to it and are really the cornerstone of general aviation.
I didn't mean it as a criticism, but just a reality of exactly what you said, is that it takes a lot of time to do these things, and they're projects that we don't always get done in time.
Well, I want to congratulate you on your award that you're going to or have received, the recipient of the Freedom of Flight Award. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah.
And you've had an interesting career yourself. Did all of this interest start with your tenure in the Air Force, or did it start before then?
Madam Chair, my interest in aviation began before I was in the Air Force, and unfortunately, because of minor physical limitation, I was not a pilot in the Air Force. So one reason I did not elect to stay on as a career. I just served there more or less to... back then there was more of a military obligation than now, so many people went in, obviously, in my case, with the hopes that I might become an active Air Force pilot, was not able to overcome those obstacles. So my career really has been general aviation based and oriented, yes.
I appreciate your testimony. One of the things that I will share with you about my wonderful brother-in-law is that he was always so happy. And one time I asked him why that was, and at the time he was flying for United Airlines, and he said, well, the trick in being happy in life is to do what you want to do and get somebody to pay you to do it. So, all right, any other questions of Dick? If not, I'll ask you to step back, and Gary, if you'll call your next
chair, person. The next individual to testify on 680 will be Joel Scoggins with the Columbia Helicopters.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is Joel Scoggin with Columbia Helicopters. I'm the Facilities and Hazardous Material Managers for Columbia. I've been with them for almost 16 years now. And Columbia has been in business since 1958. I'm not sure. I know Senator Metzger has been out there, so he knows what we do. But for those of you that don't, Columbia is a operator and repair facility for large heavy lift helicopters, the twin rotor helicopters that both fit the military flies, the Army and the Navy. We operate the civilian versions. We do logging, oil exploration, firefighting, heavy construction. The Palmer ski lift on Mount Hood was put up with a helicopter. The Biscuit Fire was fought with a helicopter. The new Carissa was dismantled with our helicopter. We've done movies. Jurassic Park 3, which I just watched this weekend, showed both our helicopter and the many images of the helicopter that they superimposed onto the movie. So we do that kind of stuff. Prior to being at Aurora, Columbia Helicopters used to be at Swan Island, which is owned by the Port of Portland. The reason we're at Aurora is because the Port of Portland decided they could have a better use for the property than having Columbia Helicopters on there. So with very little notice and very little money, the port told us we had to go leave. And so Wes LaMotta, the owner, had to go find a spot that you could go site a helicopter company. Now, at that time, we weren't flying the big twin-rotor helicopters. We were flying the little tiny helicopters around. In 1974, I believe, they purchased a property that we now own on the north end of the Aurora Airport, and in 1976 moved in. One of the lessons that we have learned is you have to be the master of your own fate. It is not a good business decision to invest huge sums of capital and then either have somebody tell you you have to move or pull the plug on you with little or no notice. We also, besides owning our own property, we lease, I think it's a little over 10 acres, almost 11 acres from the state to run a small FBO, which is fixed-based operation, Senator Johnson explained. We repair small helicopters. We do most of the news helicopters in town. We do several sheriff department helicopters. Lane County comes to mind. And other folks who have small rotorcraft. Ted Millar, who spoke, used to have a 206, Bell 206, to run his business, and we not only taught him how to fly, but repaired his helicopter as well. We used to do fixed-wing aircraft, but as of a couple years ago, there's several other folks on the airport doing that work, and so we decided we'd focus in on the rotorcraft. We also own some T-hangers, which are... The reason they're called T-hangers is because they're kind of shaped like the airplane, and they're opposed back and forth, and so we do that. I would hope that you guys approve Senate Bill 680 for several reasons that were not only voiced earlier, but some other ones that I want to do now. One of the main issues that we would like to see fixed is that currently Aurora is zoned as a P zone, public use zone, and it has an airport overlay, so the general use is airport, but every time somebody wants to go build a building, they have to go get a conditional use permit. The state just recently wanted to go site a trailer, an office trailer, for their state airport manager and had to go get a conditional use permit. It took him an awful long time to site a building, plus having to pay the fees of the county, so on and so forth. One of the things we would like to see done is encourage the counties through this to develop an airport zone so that you can define what aviation-related businesses need to be or should be at an airport and then allow them to do that and not necessarily put them through that public process of getting a conditional use permit. We've done that several times when we just want to add the same building. We take an existing building, we want to add a new building that looks just like it, we want to house the same people, and yet you got to go through the process, you got to pay your fees, and all of that discourages growth. I can give you countless examples of things where we've wanted to do things, and then just running through the process of getting them done discourages you from doing them.
Jill, I believe the bill just says that the county must shall cooperate with it. Do you see it as being something stronger, such as just simply preempting the county?
Well, in version 3, it was a little, language was a little bit stronger. Our hope is that they will do it cooperatively. I'm not suggesting that we force the counties. The counties currently have a law that was passed, I believe, in 1995, mandating to them to protect airports through zoning, and they were supposed to do it at their next periodic review. Marion County, where Aurora Airport resides, has not undertaken that periodic review. They're still in the periodic review that was took place when the original when that legislation was passed, and I've asked the county commissioners about that and the planning staff, and it's mainly the planning staff, who said, well, we'll deal with that when we get to our next periodic review, which could be 20 years from now since they've took over 10 years, and they still haven't got it. As I understand it, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, and Washington County are the only counties that have done airport protection, as was required by the 1995 law. Clackamas County, I asked them if they included Aurora in their protection plan, and they said, well, no, why would we? And he goes, Aurora's in Marion County. It's really on the border. One side of the road, Arndt Road, is in Clackamas County. The other side is Marion County. And I said, well, because if you go decide you want to build a hotel on your end of the county, right in the runway path, you're not protecting the airport. And he kind of got his look in his eye. He didn't quite understand it. But that's, I think that's the gist of what the law was supposed to do. But yet, even this county that implemented it for the airports that were physically in their county didn't bother to look 100 yards to the north, or excuse me, to the south, and say, oh, we should probably do something for that airport as well.
Carol, I'm going to get you to wrap up here. We've got a number of people left, and we
That's
have
fine.
Some other bills.
A couple quick points that I'd like to make is, first, this bill, I think, believes would provide a win-win situation. County taxes would be higher because of the increased property value of bringing in private development. Owners would obviously get an economic benefit, and the state would get a benefit because as we bring up employment, obviously you guys get employee taxes through income, and that would be good. Also, this is a public-private partnership. You can look at Aurora's growth, which has been tremendous, and I will ask you to compare it to any other airport in this state, and a very good neighbor. That would be the Molino Airport, which is just 20 miles away, and it hasn't grown at all. And that's owned by the Port of Portland. Increase in activity at airports equals more fuel taxes, which funds ODA. That is a primary deal. The governor has his Connect Oregon plan, which you guys are going to discuss. We believe that this bill flows in that, because one of the primary ways of connecting Oregon, because it's a big state, is through the air, because anybody who's driven to Burns knows that it's way faster to fly than to spend 8 hours and drive. With that,
all right.
I'm done. Thank you for your time.
Gary, I'm going to, I'd like to call up Bob Hedley from the department, if I could get you to step back and let me get a little bit of a different balance here, and let's see what some other people say, and then you'll come back. You have three more people? Okay. All right. Welcome.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Hedley, the Oregon Director of Aviation for the Department of Aviation. I wanted to say that our policy that department puts out is planned and put into effect by our board, and that the staff, as I am, implement that policy. In this particular bill, our board does not have a policy position. We don't have one on this. But I did want to say that we do have rules in effect today that govern through defense operations. We do have airports, as we've been talking here today, that do have to defense operations. And really, in my view, this bill formalizes what we're already doing. We do have a full-time airport manager at Aurora, and he's really doing most of what is in this bill today to manage the airport, not only what's off the airport, but on the airport. So we're already doing most of what is contained in the bill.
Okay. Any questions about the airport? Okay. All right. And now I'm going to call DLCD. Bob Rindy.
Good Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation Development. And we also are, it's hard to take a position at this point on the bill because I did want to at least hear the testimony today and try to get a better sense as to what the proponents were trying to do with this bill. We are involved in this and we thought we should testify because the bill does ask Land Conservation Development to do things like cooperate, encourage, remove barriers, and I think the intent clearly with that is that ultimately LCDC will have to amend statewide land use rules, planning goals that affect airports and lands that are adjacent. And so the last thing that we want to do is have the responsibility for that but not really know exactly what it is that the proponents would like or what you would like if you pass this in the end. It's good to have the flexibility so that the commission can deal with conflicting points of view on these things. LCDC did, as was mentioned earlier, adopt airport rules about 7 or 8 years ago. Maybe a little longer than that. That was long and hard, very contentious. And there's lots of parties that have different things as to what they want in those rules. And I'm sure that'll be the case here. So my main point is I really would like the opportunity to work with Legislative Council and make sure that it's really crystal clear to us as to what you expect LCDC to do. The second thing, we note that one of the main tools that I think this bill relies on is the requirement that counties and cities adopt plans for airports. We had some discussion earlier with regard to Parakeet View. Parakeet View has changed quite a bit in the last two legislative sessions, and it's going to change again this session if one of the main bills on it passes. Counties aren't going to be required to do Parakeet Review. So we can't really assume anymore, at least as the laws are written today, that there will be the airport plans that I think were contemplated back in 95 when that legislation was passed. And so we would want to make sure that this legislation perhaps works even if counties don't complete that planning. If you do something to try to get that planning done and get it done faster, I think you're going to have to provide some funding. I would suspect that's the primary reason that counties have been slow to do this. It can be long and hard and expensive for local governments, and more local governments are struggling just to do the land use planning, that the basic land use planning, as funds are short. There's a number of technical issues we have to this. I don't know that you want to hear all those today. I can go through them one at a time. We're not clear whether the bill intends to authorize the list of uses on the front of the dash fives. There are at least three uses there, A, B, and C, and then use K that are new uses that probably most airport plans and land use plans for airports don't today authorize. If the intent is these are all authorized and on and adjacent to current airport, I would like to see the bill just say that. It's a lot easier if the intent is that LCDC authorize these, then we want it to be clear whether that's for every property that touches an airport, because those are the kinds of questions that are going to come up in hearings. So we want to work with the sponsors, and we have already talked
and you
a couple
heard
times.
Mr. Johnson, yes, say that they were very willing to continue to work until they got some of the things and the concerns addressed. Are you familiar with exactly what this is aimed at as far as the land use? Have there been land use regulations that have prevented through the fence operations, or should that be a question for someone else?
Mr. Chair, no doubt, especially with regard to through the fence operations, because we have airport boundaries, and I think for those airports that have established those, the rules are pretty clear what you can do in those today. I doubt that adjacent properties authorize some of the uses that are contemplated here. So in that sense, probably many local regulations don't allow the kind of through the fence operations that are contemplated by this. Adjacent land outside of urban growth boundaries probably a good part of that is zoned for farm use or forest use. We can't adopt new rules to allow these uses. This legislation has to change ORS 215 and other statutes to make sure those uses are allowed. But it's not even clear to us that the intent is to authorize these uses on farmland. So we want to get that straight. And if it's not, then we maybe have fewer problems. Those are the kinds of questions we're still struggling with. We want to work with Senator Johnson and the sponsors to make sure that, you know, it's real clear to us exactly what the handoff is as it goes to LCDC, and so they know what to do.
All right. Any questions? Bob? Okay. All right. Bob, I'll get you to step back, and let me take a quick look here. I'm going to call Bob Noble, airport manager from the city of Eugene.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair and the committee, my name is Bob Noble. I'm the airport manager for the city of Eugene, and I'm also on the executive board of the Oregon Airport Management Association, the president of which is here and probably will testify before you today. Thank you for having us have an opportunity to talk about this a little bit, and preface my remarks by saying it's a bit awkward to be having two groups that support aviation talking about their disagreement about a particular bill. But one aspect of the bill that has been discussed is it ready for passage? Does it need work? And where it might go in the future. But as it's written today, my comments are based on that. And I'm here to request that the committee not pass it in its current form. This legislation, while perhaps well-intended, is misdirected, has very broad consequences, and is not necessary. Regarding the need, current laws and federal guidance already cover the issue of through-the-fence operations at airports. As mentioned, the FAA does not support and actively discourages through-the-fence operations, and most airports do not permit this arrangement. Currently, however, each airport authority, as noted by Aurora, can make that decision for themselves. The proponents of the bill are advancing this legislation for the benefit of a few who already have a solution they could seek private ownership of the airport, but instead prefer to capitalize on the assets that have already been funded by public users. The proponents are not satisfied that airports can establish controls over access, reject incompatible land uses, and regulate activities at airports. And as Senator Johnson indicated, it is an issue of control. It's a very important issue of control. I truly believe that the proponents are not considering the full implication of the safety, security, and financial problems that will surface with the through-the-fence operations. This is especially true at the larger or busier airports that could be covered by this bill. The definition in the bill appears to be a bit misleading. Rural airports, as defined in SB 680, includes almost all airports in the state with the exception of Portland International Airport and Hillsboro by the definition of the population. I acknowledge that this is a voluntary program as it's written and would then imply that if you're not interested in volunteering, you wouldn't be affected. However, I don't understand if that's the case, why there's even a definition that includes all those airports. As the airport manager for the city of Eugene, I oppose the bill for the aforementioned reasons and the following key points. One, management of a publicly owned airport is a matter of local determination. There are constitutional provisions that permit the establishment of airports in Oregon, including those that have municipal, port, special district, state, and private ownership. The state of Oregon does not need to be in a position of dictating or even advocating for, on a voluntary basis, airports to permit through-the-fence operations. I would emphasize strongly that decisions about the form and substance of regulating access to airports should remain exclusively with the local authority and subject to the adopted transportation, land use, and development plans for that community. I personally have been involved in 10 years worth of planning for the development of the airport. It would be inappropriate for those plans to include the unfettered access from surrounding properties, which would require a whole nother several years of investment in replanning the whole plan for the airport. That's not to say that that can't happen. It just would make sense if it does happen, that it happens with the adjacent property owners who own that property, then they have then in essence own the airport. Two, the ability to control access and activities at airports is essential for safety and security. Again, this is particularly true of larger airports, but I can't tell you how important security is today at today's airports. I visited a through-the-fence operation airport in Oregon the other day and found a vehicle gate wide open. Now, there was no commercial air service at that airport, but that is not something that you're going to want to find on a private parcel access to the airstrip. The concept of having aircraft people, employees, and associates operate an airport without knowing who they are, having control of their activities, is the antithesis of airport safety and airport security. It is literally a full-time endeavor to create a safe and secure environment at a commercial airport. While I do not know which federal agency will ultimately be tasked with airport perimeter security, or even for that matter, general aviation security, the Department of Homeland Security is currently going through their growing pains in that regard, I will speculate that the Transportation Security Administration or its successor will have major difficulties with the proposed legislation. The funding for airports, three, the funding for airports, which are owned by the state of Oregon, are derived from fees paid by aviation users. Most of this revenue comes from the larger airports. Thus, the proposal to use these funds to support a through-the-fence operations at a state-owned airport like Aurora seems inappropriate and may be discriminatory toward other airports. Four, airport owners and managers are routinely advocates for economic development and share the desire to develop airports. In this regard, this is the part where I preface my remarks about seemingly awkward to be opposing a viewpoint that's trying to develop airports, because we certainly support that. How we get there, we may differ. However, the language in the bill suggests that the Economic and Community Development Department, ECDD, would be financially committed, that the United States Department of Agriculture would provide grants and loans, and that the Department of Land Conservation and Development, DLCD, and the local authority would ensure that land use laws that are determined to be barriers would be eliminated within 2 years.
Yep, but those you are now referring to the original bill with
number three, and I was not
changed.
Yes, I realize that.
Okay,
apology. Recognizing that the new language in number five, though, is still, as you remarked, a bit vague about what the intent there is. Again, and supporting my notion that this really is a local determination issue. In closing, Senate Bill 680, as currently written, will create problems for safety and security at our airports, has broad inferences regarding elimination of land use regulations or obligations by local authorities, the use of public funds, and mention that in just a minute if you have questions, establishes a role for the state of Oregon in advocating a policy that is not generally embraced in the aviation and airport industry and which could diminish local authority. And for those reasons, the proposed bill should not be passed into law. And I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Do you feel that the present system that is in place today about the through-the-fence operations actually in no way hinder economic development? In other words,
I've tried to probe that, and what I've found in every example that I've asked about, it comes back to Aurora. And the example at Aurora is some of the testimony was presented was the ability to develop, get permits, get sewer permitted, and those types of things. And those are obviously challenges that an airport ought to be able to find a solution for. And I encourage them to find that with either the county or through revisions with LCDC. But we had to go through that ourselves. We are outside the urban growth boundary, outside the city limits, and had to write into the metro area general plan an exception for the development of those properties that are affected by airport operations. And that's really the way under our current land use laws to do it.
Okay, other questions? Senator Metzger.
Mr. Noble, if you could just help me on one issue. You talked about essential safety and security operations at the airports, and I don't see anywhere in this bill that there's any mandate or requirement or suggestion that security would be compromised. In other words, that would prohibit any change from saying, by the way, you have to leave security and safety up to your own decision making. And it would seem to me that if this were to be into effect, that any regulations for safety and security, you know, aren't being waived by this.
No, I didn't suggest that they were. I think it just poses the practical dilemma of. And a number of airport developers and a number of airport activities that are not controlled or directed by the airport will put a big burden on the airport to, quote-unquote, herd the cats and to make sure that those properties are secured. It just becomes a much more ambitious program.
But just one quick follow-up on that, Madam Chair. But that could be a requirement of anyone who develops.
Absolutely, and should be.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Other questions? All right. Senator Starr.
Thank you. I guess my question is related to number one on your list. That I'll just read this. I would emphasize strongly that decisions about form and substance of regulating access to airports should remain exclusively with the local authority, subject to the adopted transportation land use development plans for that community. And I guess my question is how is that inconsistent with this bill, in that this bill is a voluntary program that the local airport, the local community, you know, basically applies to take part, participate in as a part of a pilot project? How is that inconsistent? I don't see the inconsistency.
Well, my first reaction to that is the bill does not call for a community-adopted amendment to the land use plan. It talks about that there would be a direct link to LCDC or to DLCD that would drop those barriers for the purpose of airport development. Now, if that's what the local community and local airport management want, then yes, they can do that today without this legislation. I mean, it's not inconsistent with the vague framework of what's in the bill, but it's also a condition that's available to Aurora today. And I'm just not sure what this does, other than the things that quickly caught my attention about this were, one, it's defining almost all of the airports, and I don't understand why. Two, it's wasn't initially just one airport, it was a number of airports. What is driving the need, I guess, is my first thing, and it was the development issues at one particular airport. And I guess if the development issues at one particular airport need to be addressed, then they should be, and we would help try to make that happen as airport managers. But it seems like this is a broad stroke at something that could create a lot more chaos for a lot more airports.
All right. Senator Pisanti.
Thank you. Bob, do we have any through-the-fence operations in Eugene?
No.
All right. I'm going to have one more. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Step back. I'm going to ask one more in opposition, and then I'll go back to you, Gary, for those. I do want to find out, though, if there's anyone here other than the department for the public hearing on House Bill 2116. Okay. If not, I would say to the department that's probably in lieu of time. I'll have you come back on Wednesday, but or maybe I have to have you come back at a later time if it's not posted. I'll have to think about that. Okay, but we will do the other two bills. Okay, I'm going to call up Darren Griffith. Welcome, Darren. You've been very patient.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Darren Griffin. I am the president of the Oregon Airport Management Association. Our association represents the airport managers of all publicly owned airports in Oregon, and we have been in existence for a little over 55 years now. I first want to say I sent the committee a letter about a month ago, and there's been some changes to 680 since then that address some of OAMA's initial concerns, and we certainly appreciate those changes. We still have some concerns, a couple of which Mr. Noble just addressed, so I, in the interest of time, I won't cover them again. I did want to say just inconsistency between both letters, the letter you're looking at now and the one I sent you a month ago. Our first concern is the precedent this sets with the Federal Aviation Administration. They clearly discourage through-the-fence activity at airports. It's in advisory circular guidance, and that is something that we take very seriously. We are facing very challenging times in terms of FAA funding. In the last 3 years, the state of Oregon has received over $130 million in AIP grants to its publicly owned airports, which is by far and away the largest source of funds for Oregon public airports to enhance and improve their facility and their infrastructure. President Bush's budget proposes a $500 million reduction in AIP funding in this next budget year. We've been warned by the FAA that we'd better prepare for there to be less money available going forward because of tighter budget conditions. What that means is that each FAA regional office, and for us it's in Renton, Washington, who administers AIP grant funds, has less to work with, and they have Oregon, Idaho, and Washington that they need to push out their discretionary grant dollars to. There is a level of competition involved in getting those grant dollars, and our concern is that no other state in this country has taken the step of actively adopting through the fence as a pilot program and as a state endorsing it and administering it. And when it comes time to dispersing those funds, that certainly isn't going to help the case for Oregon. I certainly agree with Senator Johnson that they're not going to turn off the grant funding. There's many legitimate projects in this state, many legitimate airports that worked very hard to get that grant funding, and even if they have through the fence, it doesn't mean they'll turn the money off. Our concern is that at a higher level, when they have less to work with and they have a state that is actively going against their guidance, that may hurt us at the end of the day. There's no way to know, but we just wanted to reiterate that to you. My second point in the letter was in regards to how the Department of Aviation is funded. We don't believe that it's an appropriate use of their funds to be advocating for private property interests when most of those funds come from the commercial air carrier airports in Oregon through the aviation fuel tax. The third point, I won't belabor that too much. It's a little unclear to me now in the fifth version what the role of DLCD and possibly setting aside or working together on land use laws as it relates to the pilot program, how that is coming together now. OAMA's primary concern is that private property interests through the fence access not be given a competitive advantage over other publicly owned airports that don't have through the fence access. Giving them access to funds, the ability to waive land use restrictions or reduce them, any of those things that are contained in Senate Bill 680 that apply to private property also need to apply to all publicly owned airports that are trying to develop their own property. And there are a lot of them. Senator Johnson mentioned there's a lot of empty land sitting around at airports, and that's absolutely true. And it's a concern to many airport managers who are trying to develop that land because that's how we make ends meet. We're given a mandate by the FAA to make these airports self-sufficient. The best way to do that is to lease your land for long term and generate revenue. Madras has 750 acres of land sitting right there for aviation-related development. 50 of it is shovel-ready today. Klamath Falls has 300 acres they're trying to develop. Boardman, Baker City, Troutdale, all airports with lots of on-airport developable land. Many of them smaller communities that don't have the ability to go out and aggressively market the land that they have. I'm sure they're all willing to enter into long-term lease agreements and negotiate in good faith what those rates should be. They're concerned about competitive edges being given to private property. So that is concludes my remarks. You know, we certainly stand ready with the Oregon Aviation Business Association, the Pilots Association, all the alphabet groups for aviation in Oregon to develop our airports. We always want to be a good partner in that, but as currently written, we have concerns with 680 and would ask that you not support it at this time.
Sharon, you heard Senator Johnson. Her opening remark was that this is not aimed at commercial air service, and so you're referring very much to just the general aviation.
My remarks are at the general aviation airports around Oregon. Yes.
Okay. All right. Questions? Senator Metzger.
Just a couple. Darren, your testimony and concern about the FAA about they've invested $130 million in airport infrastructure at Oregon in the last 3 years. How much of that $130 has been invested in general aviation airports that do not have commercial?
General aviation that do not have commercial service? Certainly less than half of that. Portland International Airport certainly gets a good chunk of federal grant dollars every year. Eugene does to a lesser extent, but there are 98 publicly owned airports in Oregon. To some extent, all of them are eligible for federal grant dollars and either get their grant dollars or hold them over for an additional year. So all of those publicly owned airports have something at stake here. Right now, they all qualify for federal grant dollars, and over the last 4 years have been getting grant dollars. I can't give you an exact number for how many of them, what the dollar amount is for those balance of those GA airports, though.
And then just my final question on that. Then, because you have this concern about the FAA is, you know, I mean, the suggestion has been made before, you know, maybe restricting this because of these through-the-fence operations. So, something, for example, we have the testimony from Joel at Columbia Helicopters. I have through the fence operations. Do we have any history that they have been ratcheted down for those airports because they have had through the fence operations?
The only time the FAA will turn off the grant dollars is if they believe that you're allowing through the fence access and not being properly compensated for it. That did occur at the Aurora State Airport in the late 1990s, and the state fixed that and put in a more structured mechanism for how private property owners would access the airport. On principle, they won't turn the money off. They won't tell you, well, we're unhappy with you granting through the fence access and we're going to turn it off. I can tell you they feel very strongly about it. Renton. They fully expect the publicly owned airport managers to be the chief advocates for not allowing through the fence activity, which is one of the main reasons why I'm here today.
Okay. Senator Przanski.
Long-term leases, can you tell me what they would average in length of time?
FAA guidelines for long-term leases are 30 years. There are certainly airports that have chosen to go longer than that on airport, 40, 50 years. But, again, FAA guidance, which is what we try and manage our airports to since we are receiving a lot of money from them, is 30 years. And I know from personal experience sometimes it is difficult for folks to amortize that or even get a loan on 30 years, and so airports will sometimes go longer than that. But especially at the more rural general aviation airports, they're certainly more willing to deal. And what are the rates? How long is the term? What's it take to get a really job-creating, revenue-creating on-airport lease?
Okay.
Thank you.
Gary, I'll ask you to come back to the table now and introduce your next three people, and I would hope that they might also, since they've heard some of the opposition, might refer to some of that if they should so desire.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with regard to time, we will move along as quickly as we possibly can. At this point, I'd like Dennis Winningstead, the fixed base operations manager from Newport, and Gina Thompson, the controller at Oregon Aero, to join us.
My name is Dennis Winningstead. I'm the General Manager of Central Oregon Coast Air Services, DBA COCUS, located at the Newport Airport in Newport, Oregon. I came here simply to say that I am an FBO operator who is for the bill. I can see good things in the bill, and I don't see much bad. I am for economic development, and I'd especially like to see it in Newport. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. All right.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Gina Thompson. I'm the Controller for Oregon Aero Incorporated out at the Scappoose Airport. Before you, you see our vision for our company. This is a very ambitious vision, considering that our company started on the kitchen table of the two owners. It's a husband and wife that own our company. And over the last 3 years, we've grown close to 672% in our gross revenues. We've also, in the calendar year 2004, doubled our payroll and would like to double our payroll yet once again in 2005. But unfortunately, we are restricted with our current cozy little space of only 14,000 square feet. The basic plan that you see before you would allow us to have over 160,000 square feet. It's an office, manufacturing, and hangar structure. And our business is very much aviation-related. It started out with solving pain issues and discomfort issues with aviation headsets, and we have since moved into seat cushions and upgrades for military and aviation-related or civilian aircraft. And we also have a second manufacturing facility in Salem. It's using similar technology with foam products as well, keeping our soldiers safe over in Iraq right now with helmet and liner inserts. We are basically looking towards this through the fence operation as hopefully being a success story of a good through the fence operation at the Scappoose Airport. We've worked hand in hand with the community at large. We are very active in our community. We've worked very well with the Port of St. Helens in trying to make this project benefit everyone. Very open with our plans and doing everything possible to facilitate this project that you see before you. We have entertained many options. I've been with the company a little over a year and a half, and before that I was the outside CPA for the company, and we've entertained many of the options presented before you about long-term leases and trying to put a leased piece of property next to our existing facility and making do. And if anything, we're trying to do that as a temporary stopgap measure, but it's very challenging to sell that to a potential financier when you're trying to put a building on leased land. So what we're looking for is before you as a result of trying every option we can to do a work with a lease, but really the ultimate goal is to try to have our own property, our own facilities, and the plan you see before you. We are the ones that are actually financing this building in its entirety, as well as the taxiways and runways before you, or the adjacent access to the runways.
That's some strong testimony, Gina. All right, questions?
Okay. If I could just ask one question before we leave. When Senator Johnson was speaking of your operation, it's my understanding that this bill is not going to have any impact. That y'all worked hand in hand with your local community, the airport, et cetera, to get where you're at with your through the fence operation.
That is correct, although you'll see that there has been some concern in local newspapers over our development, but we're looking forward to working with the port to show that this can be a success, that we can bring an additional 75 jobs to the county, if not more. And like I said before, we're really proud of our growth, and we're proud of having not only employees on payroll, but we're very well orchestrated with outside service providers within the local area, Columbia County and Marion County as well. So when you think about jobs and economic growth, it takes a little bit further stance than just the picture before you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll ask our last two individuals who are going to testify to come up now, John Cox and Aaron Fagery. And Mr. Fagery will close and will respond to some of the previous comments that you heard earlier today.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Cox. I'm here as a concerned citizen, a commercial pilot, an aviation and power plant mechanic, so these issues on small airports are certainly important. But more importantly, I'm here as a legislative affairs officer for the Oregon Pilots, the individuals that pay fees to the state of Oregon, consume the fuel that generates the fuel taxes. I believe this bill is an excellent bill. I would acknowledge that maybe there's some issues that need to be worked out, but economic development is an absolutely critical part of the direction the state is going. with the lack of funds to the department to do all the things needed at all the various airports, this is a new tool. It's an exciting tool, and it's one that deserves consideration. Director Marty Brantley's Department of Economic and Community Development has listed 19 counties within the state, 66 communities. I've listed some of those under each of your jurisdictions that are considered economically distressed within the state. Each of these are named areas that need this kind of vibrant aviation policy. So that's why this is a very important bill. There are four key points that seem to get overlooked. I think they've come out today, but I'd like to restate those. The first is that this bill was for rural airports, and the definition of rural tends to get distorted. It would not include major metropolitan areas such as Medford, or Eugene, or Bend, or Redmond. But it really is an outreach program, which today is only affecting one airport, that's Aurora. I'd like to speak about Independent State, who has not requested participation. That's another airport managed by the state and owned, which has seen tremendous growth on the economic tax base and on the voters who've chosen to move there. I'm going to be a lessee, building a private non-commercial hangar. But to do so, that lease, it was a question that was raised earlier, is a 25-year lease with 1 5-year renewable. And it is not possible for me to build the quality that I would like long-term. And I'm sensitive to Mr. Dale's comment that he wouldn't want to give up the building at the end of the lease. But it is impossible to finance it through conventional financing. So that's something that I have to do with the full commitment that I can get my benefit over those 25 years. And yet people at Independence do it because it is an airport that brings the kind of stimulation we need to see at all of our airports. Our state has 195 airports, not just public, not municipal, not port authority, but also private. And this shows a key focus, a direction by the committee to reach out and stimulate aviation as a key component of our transportation. This bill, as a second point, is meant to encourage and promote. And I think all the concerns that are addressed can be met through appropriate changes. I think Aaron may get to those in the summation. Third, it's voluntary. You tend to get the feeling that major metropolitan airports are being forced to capitulate or give something up. This is a tool to those airports that don't have such authority structure. They opt in. I think it was originally built in one of the drafts that there were one airport, it was Aurora, and there were a potential of six others. It's now down to three others. I think it's a tool when properly written. There would indeed be many people that would like to have it. But right now it's one airport, Aurora State, three that would opt in. They would need to be rural in nature, and it specifies the number of people that community would serve. And lastly, it's going to grandfather in January of just 2009, which would give it about 3 years to prove its viability. We owe it to our children, our citizens, pilots, which is a fairly small group, and more importantly, the business community, to understand the dynamic that takes place that would cause a company like Vans Aircraft that was started at one of these smaller airports, or Oregon Airport, Oregon Aero, Lancair over in Redmond, and now called Columbia, the certified operation in Bend. What is it that causes companies to make this investment and go ahead? And I think this particular bill, if modified and approved, would prove to be a very positive stimulus for state development. A couple of the points that came up, there was a mention that the federal government would run away from giving grant money to airports if they considered through the fence. I don't know all the particulars, but it's my understanding that at Aurora Airport, the FAA knows full well the through-the-fence operations that exist today that are the foundation of this bill, and they've seen fit to release $1.4 million for a major improvement at the airport. So I do not believe it is going to cause a reduction of funds and that concern is ill-placed. Another issue is one that's a little more difficult to grasp onto, and that is if you go throughout the state and those 195 airports, there are indeed communities that have a tremendous amount of land. There is a reason why people pick locations that they do. If I found a way that I could transport someone to one of the underdeveloped 300 or 400 acres sitting, I would certainly try to do that. I think it's wonderful that we have casinos that are going into the smaller communities. Maybe every casino will put in an airport. But the point here is that this is a very viable tool which, properly written, can stimulate the business climate, bring revenue into the state, and meet the needs of the aviation community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Any questions of John?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Just one question, sir. On your
on the sunset. How does that work if you have developed through between now and the year 2009 a group of through the fence properties, and then you sunset their ability to go through the fence?
I don't think you sunset their ability. I'm going to let Aaron address that here in just a moment. I believe what it does is this bill has an expiration date, if you will. You'll see the results within the 3 years identified. But I'll let Aaron address that.
Shall I address it now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Aaron Fagry. I believe what would sunset is the bill and this program, but I don't think it would affect any through the fence that was created during that period. That land use actually was established for that, and there was an agreement with the airport, then it would be grandfathered in.
Thank you.
All right,
Aaron?
Yes. Aaron Fagry of Aaron Fagry & Associates in Portland. I've worked on airports around our state for approximately 20 years. I began that work not as a pilot, but as a community planner, and in fact got into aviation by accident. But for better or worse, now I've worked on probably 30 different airports all over the state, ranging from Independence to Christmas Valley and pretty much everywhere in between. I've worked for the state, I've worked for various cities and counties, and have through that become somewhat of an expert in aviation planning. It's through that process of being out in the community that I've become a supporter of this through the fence concept and trying to see how it can serve our state, the citizens, the communities, and the airports themselves. I would start off with a little description that we remind ourselves that aviation was invented only 100 years ago, so the dream of flying in man has been 10,000 years, but it's only in the last 100 years that man has been able to fly. The early airports were all private airports. There was no public airport system just established by the government. It all began as private enterprise. It was a couple of bicycle mechanics who came up with the idea and the first successful one. Obviously, what happened then is our country, and I think it was Civil Aviation Authority, was the first government agency, which later became the FAA. They recognized the need for a system of airports that you could take off at one airport and land another. There would be conventions. Everything would work for interstate commerce. That, I think, is the reason we see this policy in place generally, that the airport should be largely controlled by the government agency. It was necessary in, let's say, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s to get a good system of airports across the country that worked. We all know that the airlines, there was a deregulation act. Prior to that, the FAA literally told every airline where they could fly, how much they could charge. It was, again, 100% control. And the irony that we're up against today, and it's unfortunate that in the general aviation community we have these two different strong opinions, but it's from my experience, it's become kind of self-evident that our airports, our general aviation airports, are not getting the benefit of private enterprise that they should be. And we look at an airport like Aurora Airport, and it's a model that I think the idea is maybe we can learn something from it. On what I passed out, if you turn to the second page, you see this incredible graph. I just on my own, for my own interest in this, have worked with Marion County Tax Assessor and the Washington County Tax Assessors, got all the data on valuation, and you can see, I've compared Aurora and Hillsborough just because they're two kind of similar size airports close to Portland. You can see this development that occurs at Aurora by that availability of private funds and private enterprise. I'd say one of the biggest surprises to me has been that when I go to the communities around these airports, I discover that the city councils would prefer through the fence as well, because they look at the airports and they say the airports are getting a free ride. Some of these airports pay no taxes. Generally, the land is not taxed. Usually, the improvements have some taxes on them, although even that I find different results. They say, gee, a lot of these airports aren't paying their own fair share for fire, police, education, and the community. So if you go to the third page, you'll see that this little Aurora airport that's maybe a third the size of Hillsboro is now providing significantly more taxes to their community than is Hillsboro, that we think of as probably the more important airport, typically, because Intel and Nike are out there. So I don't know how much more to go on that, but I'd say the message I would bring is that as someone who's been around the state, we see that this is an opportunity that maybe there's inevitability that many airports around the country are going to go this direction. The FAA is experimenting with privatization of airports. They're allowing some airports to be completely owned by private companies. They are experimenting with innovative financing methods. So even though we hear the FAA is this one agency that only looks at things one way and doesn't like through the fence, the reality is they're also looking for how we can grow aviation, make general aviation stronger, make the industry stronger. On the front of the one piece, which is kind of the longer piece I've prepared, is that aviation is in transition right now. And I think what this bill is attempting to do is work with what in Oregon we see as a very positive result, and saying, let's experiment with two more airports if they're out there and they wish to experiment, and look at it as a new way of supporting our airports and our communities. I could walk you through a little bit more of the actual amendments. I could respond a little bit to some of the comments that have come up, but I also could just turn it over to you, Madam Chair, if there were
Thank
some specific
you,
questions.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate that. We've given a lot of time to the bill, and I do have two other bills I need to hear. So I'm going to ask you to forego that. I want to thank you for this nice handout that you've given us today, and look forward to reading it. Does anyone have any questions of Aaron? Interesting chart there about the Hillsboro Airport, wasn't it? All right. Thank you very much, and that completes your people, I believe.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right.
And as Senator Johnson said, we will continue to work with those who are willing to work with us. We will refine the amendments, and we will be back seeking your support and passage of 680.
Very good. It's been a very interesting hearing, and I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 680 and move very quickly to House Bill 2106, and I'll open the public hearing. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2106-A authorizes the Oregon Department of Transportation to establish, by rule, reasons for issuing replacement driver's licenses, permits, or identification cards. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. We have received a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I welcome Robin Freeman to the... And also, Robin, 2116 is already scheduled for Wednesday, so we're okay there. All right. Tell us why we need to establish by rule reasons.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have testified in front of this committee before on this, so I'm not going to repeat my testimony. I'll just summarize what this bill does. It amends current law that restricts the issuance of replacement licenses or ID cards to specific situations, and currently that language is very narrow. If your ID or driver's license has been lost, stolen, mutilated, your name or address has changed, or you're requesting a new number due to fraudulent uses, that's the only reasons that we can now currently under statute issue a replacement. So what this would do, it would create authority for the department to set eligibility criteria in administrative rule, and it will allow customers to pay a more equitable fee for the issuance of a driver's license or an ID card. And I might add, it does not change our current process for issuing the replacement cards. They would still have to have proof of age and identity to obtain before issuance of a replacement.
Robert, would you give me just an anecdotal example?
Yes, there are several situations in which a replacement would be appropriate. For instance, if you were adding or removing an endorsement to your driver's license, you currently wear glasses. Let's say you went out and had LASIK surgery and you were no longer required to wear glasses to operate a motor vehicle, and you had that taken off your driver's license, you wouldn't want to have to pay an original fee for that. Nothing had changed. We would just issue a replacement.
Any questions of Robert? Senator Starr?
Thank you. Thank you, Robin, for your testimony. The laws has an emergency clause. Why do we need to do this right away?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, this is aligning current practice with statute. When we reviewed statute, we realized we'd been issuing a lot of replacements that currently, with strict review of the statute, we should be issuing originals. So we'd like to correct that as soon as possible.
Follow-up of anything? No? Okay. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Everybody all right with the bill? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2106A, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2106A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2106A and Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Whitsett moves House Bill 2106A to the floor with the due pass recommendations. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. All right. Who would like to carry it? All right. Senator Bishop will read the carry it. All right. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2267.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2267 revises language relating to the applicability of boating laws. It, in fact, adds documented vessels in the application of boating laws related to equipment requirements and operations. We have received a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Judith. Paul Dunheffer from the State Marine Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you for your patience.
It's all right. Last man standing, maybe.
You learned a lot about airports, though.
I also recalled a lesson that I was told long ago, and that is, if you want your bill, don't beat it to death.
Bill, or do you want to talk?
I'll try to heed that lesson here. House Bill 2267 is a bill that is truly a housekeeping bill. It was introduced by the Intercommittee on Legislative Council to fix a problem that we have in 830.015. That's our applicability provision. In looking at it, there was a court case that came out of the South Coast last year involving a documented vessel, and the judge in that case considered dismissing it because 830.015 appears to exclude documented vessels from the applicability of our equipment and carriage requirements and other boating laws. That got us looking into this. We researched it with Legislative Council. We also researched it with the Coast Guard and found out that indeed we do have a serious problem with the applicability. 830.015 leaves out documented vessels from the applicability of our equipment, carriage requirements, and other things. Federal law requires that state law, which really is derived from the Federal Boat Safety Act 1958 and 1971, is consistent with federal law, and in this case we're inconsistent with it. Attached to my testimony is a letter from the Coast Guard in which they point out that inconsistency. One of the problems that it could cause for us were to continue to be inconsistent is that we have to have a consistent law in order to qualify for federal grants. And so we don't want to jeopardize the $2.3 million that we received for boating safety from Coast Guard grants, and we want to clean up this this statute. So Legislative Council has rearranged 830.015 to make it apply to documented vessels, as we had always assumed that it did, bringing it in line with others, with documented vessels into line with other vessels, and making it consistent with federal law. And we would request your support of the bill.
Thank you for that testimony. I'm looking at the letter that is attached to your testimony, and they've added to the United States Coast Guard the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which I just hadn't happened to see one of those pieces that had that added to it. All right, any questions about this bill? This looks to me like have you ever applied? Was it in the application of something? Because you were responded. Were you trying to apply for some federal funds as well when you found out that, or does it just go back to the court case?
Madam Chair, it goes back to the court case. We've been applying for and receiving federal funds, and really have been operating as if our law applied to documented vessels. And the language of 830.015 is convoluted in its current format, with a lot of notwithstanding double negatives and that. And as you sort it out, you just come to realize that, whoops, it doesn't apply to documented vessels, and that's never been intended, and it really hasn't been our practice. We've been operating as if they're covered all along, so this is making something right that is inadvertently.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
One question. I was listening to testimony, and I guess, Paul, the only thing I have is that this does not have an emergency clause to make it go into effect upon signage. Because we're out of compliance, is there any need to do it now? Because if it goes into our normal standard enactment date, it won't be until January 1 of next year.
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I think we'll be fine without an emergency clause. The Coast Guard is hasn't come down on us, understanding that we're trying to fix this. And I think if the legislature acts and they understand that the effective date is a few months out, we'll be fine.
All right. Thank you, Paul. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2267 and open the work session on House Bill 2267.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2267 to send it forward with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Whitsett moves House Bill 2267 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. Ordered. If there's no other business to come before this body, I will now call the meeting adjourned.